بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمد عبده ورسوله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته The Quran tells us that God guides whom He will to the path of Islam. And in my case, I think that's true. Many things fell into place along my road to embracing Islam that were not a conscious action or a conscious decision of my own. Also, we know that to embrace Islam, it is a return and not a conversion per se. Nevertheless, at some point on the human scale, some process has to take place before one reaches the decision to accept Islam. And that's what I would like to speak to you tonight about. As far as the big picture of how and why and exactly how the process takes place, one can only say, Allahu A'lam, God knows best, but I can only give you my personal experiences. My background, I was brought up in a family in Protestant Christianity. We went to church fairly regularly, not every Sunday, but with regularity. And by and large, I was in agreement with the ethics of the teaching of the church that I went to. And I still believe today that there are more similarities between the teaching that I grew up with and Islam than there are differences. Nevertheless, there are differences and there are important differences. Had there been no differences, there would have been no question of making a change. For me, to go to church, it was something that was comfortable, but not terribly vital. It wasn't something that impacted terribly on my daily life, in part because of some lingering questions that I had about Christian teaching, about what I was taught in church on Sunday mornings. And there were three major issues that I had a problem accepting and was always grappling with. The first is the concept in Christianity of the Trinity, that somehow there are three in one, and one who are three, and the Son of God, who is also somehow God Himself, but God would kill the Son, who is still part of the three and part of the one. It was all very mathematical tricks. It doesn't make sense. It didn't then, and it doesn't now. There seemed to be some hocus-pocus there that no one could quite straighten out for me. The second principal difficulty I had accepting Christian teaching was the Christian doctrine of original sin. According to this, Adam, alayhi salam, committed the first sin, and from then on, all his progeny are paying for it. When you're born, you're marked with this original sin, and there's no way that you can be saved except through accepting Jesus, Isa, alayhi salam, as the Savior. And that's the other part, that's part B of the Christian doctrine of salvation. That to get rid of this original sin, you have to believe. And that's really, when you get down to it, that's what it is. It's not what you do, it's not what you say, it's not really how you live your life, it's what you believe. And there's no accounting of your lifestyle. The idea is, if you believe, you will lead a good life. But that may or may not take place. And that was problematic for me as well. The third major problem that I had with Christianity growing up as a young man was the separation, the bifurcation between secular on the one hand and religious on the other. The church was something you did on Sundays. You went for an hour and then you left and you didn't have to really worry about it until next Sunday. What happened for that hour on Sunday morning didn't really impact on what happened the rest of the week, and you could put it aside. That's religion. That's this is business, or this is pleasure, or it was separate. And that was problematic for me. If there is a God, why does He only affect 1 hour out of the week? My first real exposure to Islam came when I was at college, at the university. And that was good for me. It was beneficial because I viewed university, college, as a time to explore new ideas, to look at how different cultures, different people behave, what they believed in, and to look at these different ideas. So I first approached Islam really as subject matter. I was taking classes in the Middle East at University of Virginia, and to know something about the Middle East, you have to know something about Islam. You could say that there are people who in the press who talk about the Middle East and may know nothing about Islam, but the idea is that you have to know something about it. So Islam was sort of chapter two. You know, first you look at the rivers and the deserts and the mountains, and then chapter two is Islam, and then from there you get on to the history. But I didn't really leave it at that. I followed up. But nevertheless, it was good, that first little introduction. Because it was in an academic setting, it provided me with a measure of objectivity. I could leave the prejudices behind, what I saw on TV, what I saw in the movies, other things that I had read about Islam. There's a bunch of fanatics, they all have machine guns or swords, or the women are veiled and they don't do anything, and they're passive, etc., etc. All of those were left behind because I could come at it from the point of view of academia, and that was very beneficial for me. But I had to follow it up with my own reading, my interest outside the classroom. So I read whatever I could get my hands on for Islam. And again, this was beneficial for me, this process, because it was something I could do over time without any pressure. No one was telling me that I had to read these things except myself. And it was something that I did individually, something I would read, think about it for a little while, maybe come back to it, maybe move on. So that worked out very well for me. Finally, the other thing that really helped me to come to see Islam as it is and not how it's portrayed in this society is simply the example of other Muslims that I saw in my classes or down the street, how they live, personal contact. And you realize that these are very decent folk, but there's something that sets them apart from other people. They have something, and I wanted to know exactly what that was. As far as how I actually came to give my decision, to give my shahada, for me it was primarily an intellectual process, and that's my own personal experience. That's not to say it was devoid of emotion for me, because it's a very emotional decision to embrace Islam. But for me it was first here and then here. It's a very logical religion, much more so than Christianity, I think, and that was how I initially approached it and what was initially appealing to me. And so it was through education, really, that I resolved some of my doubts. The things that I had problems with in Christianity, I saw how they were in Islam and realized that this was closer to what I was thinking. You don't have three in one. You have one. That's it. There's an absolute unity of God, and nothing approaches on it. Allah. That's it. You don't have to play with numbers. There's one, and there's everything else. And that's very simple, and it's very easy to say. The second thing, the concept of original sin, that somehow you're tainted when you come in. In Islam, each person stands alone with his actions, not with some sort of fuzzy belief that may or may not impact on what he does in this life. You know in Islam that you are going to pass through judgment at the hands of a just and merciful God on the day of judgment, and you'd better do something about it. You'd better get ready for it. You can't just put your trust in, so everything will be fine. This idea that you're going to pass in judgment, it's both scary and it's comforting at the same time, in a strange sort of way. It's scary because you realize that what you do now is going to impact on what happens later, on what happens at the end. And that can be very, very frightening. It's also comforting, though, because you know that your faith, that what you do here, you do for yourself. You don't have to worry about the person sitting next to you, but you also know that he's not going to do anything for you either, because he can't. It's you and God, one-on-one. And that's, like I say, scary and comforting. But it's also, for me, it was very appealing. Finally, what I found perhaps most appealing about Islam was there's a program of practical application of ideas in real life. You have your ideas, but you also act on them. There's no division between Caesar and God. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and unto God what is God. There's none of that. God impacts on everything. There's no 1 hour a week where he's relevant and the rest, okay? Everything impacts here with religion. It's a way of life, as we heard again and again and again. And this, I think, is the single most difficult thing for someone raised in the West, like me, to accept. Because it's a refutation of Western thought for the last 500 years, which holds that man is the center of all things, that man is the measure of all things. That's my society. That's what my ancestors, it's one way or another, have contributed to and built up, this edifice of Western society centered on man, humanistic. And then to accept Islam, you have to throw that out. And I don't know that the people who are raised Muslims quite understand how difficult that can be to do, because you're having to turn your back on everything that's come before you. But people like myself and the gentleman here are ready to make that decision. I want to close with just some brief reflections on entering into Islam. And here I'm going to commit the crime of generalizations. I hate when people speak in generalizations, but now I'm going to do it myself. I think there are some advantages for experiences of people like myself who have come to Islam later in life, who maybe were not raised Muslims. I think that in some ways we think more about the faith, because we don't take anything for granted before we give our shahada. There's no, well, go ahead and give your shahada, brother, and then we'll explain the rest of this later. No. I want to know everything right now before I give my shahada, because I know that this is the single most important decision that I can make, and I want to make sure that I'm making the right one. So we think we have a lot about the faith, and we don't take anything for granted. I think also, in some ways, we have a better appreciation of what is deen and what is tradition in the way that Muslims interact, and the way Muslims live, and the way Muslims think. Because there is the religious teaching, and then there's the way things have gone on in the last 1400 years. And those aren't always the one and the same thing. And I think that sometimes it's easier for us to sift through these sorts of things. We're also able to bring different experiences to Islam, to view things from both, in a way, outside and inside the faith. And I think that in that way we can sort of act as a bridge. But I think that that also holds true for all of us here today, because in a sense we're sort of the outpost of the Muslim world to the non-Muslim world. We act as a bridge between the two. And so I think that's a responsibility that we all share here. There are some disadvantages, though. There's a saying, there's no zealot like the convert. If anyone knows someone who's given up cigarettes, you know that that person doesn't want anyone smoking around them. And in a sense, they're sort of the same thing. And you can lose a sense of proportion. We're taught that we should be moderate in our religion. We should be moderate in our lifestyle. And sometimes, because it's such a heady thing to enter into, sometimes people who have embraced Islam can lose sight of that. We also don't have childhood traditions to draw upon. There are things that you have experienced that I will never experience. I never went to the mosque for the first time with my father. I don't remember celebrating Eid with my family as a boy. Those are things that are a part of your past that maybe you don't realize how lucky you are to have that as a past, because I don't have anything like that to draw upon. And so that's very, very special, and it's something that I wish I could experience and something I could draw upon. So, inshallah, please think about that the next time you're sort of going back in the past. Just to close, I think that because we have these different experiences, because there are things that I can understand maybe in a way that you might not be able to, and certainly there are things that you can understand that I might not be able to, I think that we have to exchange the ideas. I think that we have to turn my disadvantages and your advantages, we have to combine those. We have to fortify Islam in this way. We have to bring all of these experiences to bear without prejudice. And that sometimes that's very difficult. But I think that in this way, and perhaps only in this way, can we produce a strong, vital Islam which is both relevant and applicable in a variety of contexts here and now. Jazakumullahu khairan.